Okay, that's good.
Bill, you joined us, like, this is Jim Wayne.
You do?
Bill Derrick, and you know Tom.
Yeah, I know.
Bill's legal counsel.
We see you once or twice, the next few months too, I suppose.
Okay, this is Commissioner Susan Wefald. We are now opening hearing, informal hearing on the case number PU06421, the Trans-Canada Keystone Pipeline LLC 30-inch crude oil pipeline, Cavalier to Sargent City siting application. With me today is Commissioner Kevin Kramer. Commissioner Tony Clark is not able to be with us this afternoon, though he'll be able to review these materials before a final decision is made. No, he may not be able to be. Because we're probably going to make a decision this afternoon at 3 o'clock. All right. So, given that, however, Commissioner Kramer and I will be making a great decision on this matter. Let's go around and have everyone identify themselves, and we'll start with Pat Fon, our staff member.
That was me.
All right.
Todd Cranda with the Kelsch Law Firm.
Tom Kelsch with the Kelsch Law Firm.
Scott Ellis with Enser.
Jim White with the Sidley Austin Law Firm.
Bill Benning, staff.
And Kevin Kramer, I might just open by thanking you for being here and accommodating what is a little bit of a timing issue, to say the least, I guess. As you've no doubt noticed, we kept this morning's commission meeting open until this afternoon following when we'll reconvene following this hearing to determine the application for the, to change the route permit standard from 6 miles to 1 mile. And because that's necessary because, of course, the application, the site permit application is based on a 1 mile per route or corridor, I'm sorry, and it can't be deemed complete until we determine that it is, in fact, 1 mile corridor, if, in fact, we determine that at all. And so we appreciate your willingness to be here.
Okay. So we will go first to the applicant for them to state the issues that they have before us today and to then go through their arguments of why the commission should proceed.
Thank you, Commissioner Wefald and Commissioner Kramer. My name, again, for the record, is Thomas D. Kelsch with the Kelsch, Kelsch, Ruff & Crandall Law Firm. I will start this out. Just a little further introduction for the commissioners. Jim White, on my far right, is a member of the Sidley Austin Law Firm, and he is in charge of coordinating the federal and state regulatory activities regarding the project throughout the length of the project, including the portion that goes to the state of North Dakota. Scott Ellis is with ENSR, E-N-S-R. Scott's the manager of the environmental studies portion required for state and local permits, as well as the design of the environmental portion of the project. We have filed written testimony from Scott Ellis yesterday, both in paper form and electronically. We do have a signed, the original signed and notarized document that we would like to file today. I do want to point out one, typo from the form of the document that was filed yesterday. It is on page 4 of the document. It'd be the third paragraph from the bottom. Third line down.
I don't have a copy of what was filed yesterday.
We have a copy of the current one, which would be correct. But in the other one we had, this is in regard to the, Scott will be available for questioning and will give a little general overview of his testimony for the commissioners. The change from the previous filed testimony was we had 19 out of 23 residents. It should be 18 out of 23 residents. within the 500 feet. And what this is, we've already received waivers from, and it should read 18 out of the 23 residences that are located within 500 feet of
the. Where is that on which page?
This is on page 4.
Mm-hmm.
In the paragraph, third paragraph from the bottom, and it's on the third line.
It, and now it should be 19 out of.
Well, it should be 18.
Okay.
You have the correct.
Okay.
The one we received yesterday was.
Thank you.
The one we received yesterday was wrong. The one you received today is correct. So it should read 18. So 18 out of the 23, we have received waivers. Three of the remaining five, we are rerouting outside the 500-foot area. And the other two were in the process of obtaining either a waiver or rerouting that. We filed this request for a waiver of the 6 mile down to 1 mile, as because of the length that this pipeline goes across the whole state. According to the rules, it states that the corridor width should be 6 miles. Because this is part of a large pipeline going through many states, and the timelines that Keystone has for this, we've done two things. We've requested that the PSC consider both our corridor application and our route application at the same time. And because we've done it that way and filed both the corridor application and the route application, we've done the studies of where the route should go. We've worked extensively with the state and local and federal agencies to locate the area outside of the avoidance areas. When we were doing this process, we looked at we felt that it doesn't really make much sense to actually do the environmental study in a 6 mile width corridor when we've already narrowed it down to where the routes where we feel the route should go, and within a 1 mile corridor, if we do run into any problem, we would have sufficient area to move the route and still stay within the 1 mile corridor, and that's why we requested, and the purpose for I guess the this informal hearing today is to discuss the two issues. One, will the commission consider both the corridor and the route application, and will the commission waive the 6 mile corridor width, reduce that to a 1 mile corridor width.
What is the corridor width that the U.S. Department of State uses?
Scott or
yeah, or, I mean, at this point, they have not established a specific width. By and large, I think that most of the resource information that they're evaluating is within about a 1 mile wide corridor.
So what type of when you prepare for an environmental impact state, it says the U.S. Department of State is, this is on number five, page 3, the lead federal agency preparing an environmental impact statement for the project held public scoping meetings in Michigan. How can they, if you haven't filed with them any, and they haven't ever told you what width of the corridor is, how can they be preparing environmental impact statement? If they don't, I mean, what information have you either provided to them or what have they requested from you about a corridor?
Well, at this point, I mean, I think, you know, to repeat what I said, I think we've kind of given them a corridor that we were using as kind of our primary study corridor for the project. And it is approximately 1 mile wide for the entire project in all the states. And for that, they have gone forward. We have filed, you know, a lot of information for them that is sort of both kind of corridor-wide material as well as site-specific information along the proposed alignment.
So they do not have any criteria for the width of a corridor.
We are
could have submitted a half mile, a mile, quarter mile and they would have been happy. What is, they don't have any criteria?
We have not, I will speak for myself. I have not seen any criteria from them that specifies a specific width of corridor.
If I could speak to that, the DOS does not have a, the DOS does not have a corridor route approach. They essentially rely on the applicant to provide them with sufficient information on a corridor that the applicant deems to be the preferable route. They don't look at a, for example, a six-mile corridor and then narrow that down. They simply start with the information that the applicant provides and then review the adequacy of that information. And if they need more, they ask for more.
If this pipeline wasn't crossing an international border and, say, BLM or some other federal agency that's more accustomed to doing this sort of thing was doing it, would there have been a more identified standards? That's kind of a broad question, but I know we've had some discussion already about the somewhat uniqueness of having the Department of State be the lead federal agency.
Well, I guess I'll speak as someone who, you know, has worked with agencies like the BLM, and I think it's roughly along the lines of what Jim just stated, that it's basically an applicant proposal, and it's, you know, driven by, you know, where, you know, the study areas are to some degree driven by the issues that have to be investigated.
So if they weren't satisfied in a given stretch, they might say, well, you know what, guys, I think we need 2 miles here.
Correct.
Once they've looked at what you've submitted. Yeah.
Tell us what, since I haven't had a chance to go over this because it just came yesterday, can you please tell me here what you had, can you go over with us on page 3, what you have done to this point in order to address corridor issues that makes you confident that the 1 mile corridor is correct rather than a 6 mile corridor?
Well, I think we've done a couple things. First of all, we initiated some discussions with the various state agencies as well as federal agencies that have jurisdiction in North Dakota to identify issues. Again, we sort of laid out a preliminary route that they could look at and comment on. And so we were essentially trying to get, you know, some any specific things that would either consider a larger area of study or you know, considering moving the pipeline to avoid an issue. So we're getting feedback at that level. It started early last year. We were here, I think, in February of last year and conducted meetings with a variety of agencies. Second thing that's gone on is the project on its own has conducted open houses in a number of communities along the route to obtain feedback on on any issues that they had, land use issues specific or to, you know, landowner specific issues about the route that had been proposed on a preliminary set of alignment sheets. And then I guess it's fair to say that there has been direct contact with landowners in terms of you know, discussions about just whether or not there would be, you know, how the easement might work in the future. So there's been sort of at, you know, both a kind of public agency level as well as down to the specific landowner level of discussion so far about where the route is.
One thing, Commissioner Wiefald and Commissioner Kramer, what we're prepared to do if it would be of some assistance, Scott Ailes would be willing to give sort of a little intro to his testimony and perhaps go through it.
That would be great.
At least hit the high points and then answer your more detailed questions.
Sure.
That may help move this thing along since we're. Thank you.
Okay. Well, you know, to sort of back up, I think, you know, sort of the way at least my testimony is structured is to sort of, you know, go through what we have done to gather information, both, you know, just, you know, statistical or natural history information, but as well as input from the landowners, and then how that was compiled and how it was considered to get us to where we are now. And I think in this testimony we've outlined that we began I'm sort of going back now here to page two, and what we want to do is just sort of outline some of the kind of controlling principles of, you know, why is the route where it is and or proposed to be in North Dakota. And one of the, you know, I think that there's sort of two major considerations. One is, you know, where is it going to come across the border? And that is dictated by the an existing natural gas pipeline in Canada that's going to be converted to crude oil use, and that's roughly where that line terminates for a point where you can use that facility to then bring, you know, crude oil south. And a good bit of, you know, consideration around that point where they come south is the destinations that the project wants to reach. And a key destination is Cushing, Oklahoma, and another destination is the St. Louis area in Missouri. But if you look on a big map, you will see that, you know, it's a pretty direct route from the point it comes across the border in North Dakota down toward Cushing, Oklahoma. So that's, I'm trying to give you the big picture of, you know, where is this pipeline trying to go and when, what are the markets it's trying to reach. Another major control point, as we're calling it, is the Missouri River crossing. And the project looked at a number of different options to get across the Missouri. And, I mean, as you go further kind of to the west, you end up in, well, you'll end up in Lake Oahe. You end up, you know, you don't really want to put the pipeline under a reservoir if you can avoid it. And as you go further east, you end up going into a wild and scenic section of the Missouri River. So where it's currently proposed is in a fairly stable river section just below the dam at Yankton. So there's kind of those are kind of the two major points that you're trying to, you know, they're defined by how we get across, you know, how we're defining how we're going to get across North Dakota and South Dakota. So then we're starting to work with more local issues once we have established those major control points. What we're then, you know, then it becomes more a question. As I said, we've had some initial consultations with agencies and to establish, you know, what, you know, what resources are we looking for, and then you know, then begin to develop. You know, I think probably at first just developing what we might call a desktop study approach, where we've gone in and you gather resource information from the federal government, from the states, you know, private, you know, studies, you know, technical studies to determine, you know, what resources we're gonna cross, and in some cases what resources we're gonna need to avoid. And, you know, among those are some of the criteria that are in the North Dakota Commission regulations here.
One of my concerns, though, is that I can understand that you've narrowed it down to where it needs to cross and where it needs to go under the river and such, but as, you know, as the commission looks at comments from people, there's, you know, 182 people came to your public input meetings, but that's not everyone, you know, along the route. And the commission has started to get some messages from people who aren't happy. They think it's going to be on their land. You know, sometimes the person's land that's adjacent to them might be happy to have it on. But it might be, let's say it's a mile, 0.1, you know, over to where their land, where that other neighbor's land is located.
Half a mile.
Yeah. How do we deal with this then? Are you willing to, you know, if we establish just a 1 mile corridor, we may have a lot more difficulty with particular landowners that we could accommodate if we had a larger space. I was thinking about this before the hearing, and I wondered whether there's a way that we could, if you'd be willing to make a commitment that wherever we find that there is a landowner who isn't happy about having it on their land, that you're willing to do the extra work that would involve a corridor in that location, you know, for the 6 mile width, so that we would have more an ability to handle concerns, well, and address them.
Well, I guess my sense is that mean, on a, you know, I mean, I'm trying to remember how many total landowners we have here, somewhere
about
close
five,
to
560.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think at this point we have, I don't know what sort of, you know, input you've received.
Not many, but things keep coming. I mean, even one raises a concern if you think, well, if there'd be a way we can make this person happy here without you having to go to court or to have a decision appealed, that's one of the main benefits of working through the commission. They like us. They give us – we come in, share their concern. We're able to, you know, address their concerns, saying, I wonder if we moved it over here a bit, if we moved it over there. Would that address your concern? And it gives a little more flexibility. And when we cited the pipeline from that was the one on carbon dioxide, you know, from Beulah all the way up into Canada, 160-some miles, you know, we didn't have one person who protested that decision once the commission had made, you know, its determination on that siting, and that was a hazardous material, you know, that was in that pipeline. So I think we have a good process here and one that has worked really well. But I'm just interested in knowing how you would propose that we address those situations that may come up, even if it's two or three people along the pipeline. If we can address those by moving things slightly, it certainly will help you as much as.
Yeah. Are you asking, Commissioner, if I understand? I don't know if this was in a discussion or if I read this, but you're. If there would be some flexibility in specific circumstances where the 1 mile didn't seem quite adequate, would we be willing to do 2 miles or something and do a little extra study as situations arose? And I mean, mm-hmm. I guess that's the question. If we were to agree to 1 mile in general, but with the caveat that you'd be willing to
provide the extra work where we need it,
once in a while if necessary.
Pat.
And my concern would be that since you haven't. Let's say we come to an area where a landowner has a concern and a wider corridor hasn't been studied. The information isn't available at the hearing. So the commission can't really say, well, if we go over here, we don't run into any exclusion or avoidance areas.
We don't know that.
But we don't know. And so, you know, in your response to the commissioner, I guess I was wondering about that.
It may take a little longer. You see, if we don't up front require, I know it'll take a lot of work for you to get the 6 mile done, too. I mean, I understand that part of it. But what you have to understand then, if you would say, okay, we would try to accommodate people on a, you know, on a situation-by-situation basis where we need more information, we may not need to adjourn the hearing, come back in a month, and address those things again.
I guess one concern that approach raises, if you have three people who are unhappy and you're looking at trying to make movement to shift the pipe outside of the 1 mile corridor, that might be feasible. If you have 30 people who are unhappy and are looking also for relief outside, you wind up with a route that goes something like this, and for 218 miles, that's not really feasible. So I guess the concern is if we open up to that approach, do we then open the door to numerous requests to shift over to landowners on either side and then wind up with a route that's just not feasible.
But 6 miles is pretty wide, too. You know, I mean, that's... Right. So
it's a normal corridor.
Well, and I don't know that it... And that's another discussion, I guess. Scott, if you wanted to continue, I don't want to necessarily interrupt if there's some other things you want to bring up, but I do have some sort of general question about the whole concept of the 6 mile. I gather that's generally, they're the 10% up to 6 miles is generally in a circumstance where you do you permit the corridor first, then once you have that, you come in and you do the route. And since in my almost 4 years in the commission, we've never done that. So I'm starting to wonder about the feasibility of that, even as a...
They did it for the standard. Basin one. They followed that whole process for the basin one. The reason we haven't done it in recent ones is because they have been existing pipeline.
And that is
they have been
a difference
right next
here.
To those.
Right, they've been
previously cited. And this is not a previously cited route. See, which is to me this follows more the basin one where they were doing the carbon dioxide pipeline. And I know that it can be helpful to have some flexibility. In North Dakota, most people are willing to have a pipeline on their property, and we don't run into a lot of protests. It is very nice, though, to be able to handle the concern of the people who do have one and be able to address it as a commission without saying, well, I'm sorry, you know, we've already made that decision and we can't do anything about this. You know, it really limits our options of trying to play a very constructive role in this process.
Well, I think we have, as you know, I think in my testimony here, I mean, we have said, I mean, I think our argument here is that if you really look at it, what I hope is objectively, we don't have that many avoidance and exclusion areas in the sense of, you know, sort of the, you know, some of the land use as well as some of the, I guess I'll call them the natural resource factors. And, you know, and we do recognize there are going to be, you know, issues where some landowners are going to want changes. And I think that, I guess our feeling is that we have, you know, sufficient confidence in our, you know, I might say our 1 mile width corridor that we're down to a relatively limited number of issues that we might have to carry forward. And I guess that's kind of their point in saying, you know, to sort of step back and essentially create another, you know, widen it out to 6 miles is we think we've, you know, we haven't hit anything that we can't work. You know, your point about flexibility, I think that is inherent in the process here. I mean, there is flexibility, I think I should say, you know, in that you can, in discussions with landowners, and obviously we've had lots of discussions with landowners, there are opportunities to make changes that will, you know, accommodate their needs.
But as Commissioner Kramer said, if the corridor is here and the route is in the middle, correct, mm-hmm. of your corridor, if it's even a half a mile adjustment that needs to be made, we're off the route. That's why I really wouldn't feel comfortable moving forward unless I had a commitment to you with a 1 mile route that you would be willing to address in specific situations where the commission needed more flexibility, that you'd be willing, able to get it. You would get us more additional information to be able to accommodate specific situations that we addressed.
I would say this too. I mean, you are to be credited with the, you've spent 2 years preparing for this, and we've observed it. And I've been to some of your open houses, and there's no question that, and I want to make that clear, that I understand, acknowledge, and appreciate that
the work that's been done. We all do.
Yeah, you don't get to this point with as few, and you're right, I've read through the permit, and I'm kind of amazed in 218 miles how few exclusionary and areas you've come up against. And so I applaud all of that. It's just 1 mile isn't very wide in 218 miles either. And Commissioner Weefall's right. We're starting to feel a little bit of the pushback, and so we just want to make sure that we're on solid ground.
I think the concept that Commissioner Weefeld just iterated is pretty consistent with what Scott's testimony mm-hmm. concludes, to say, to the extent that in specific circumstances you determine that there is a reason to go outside the 1 mile corridor, that Keystone would commit to do the work to look at areas beyond the 1 mile
and where
corridor.
Is that in here then?
The last bullet point in Scott's testimony.
Page 5, the last paragraph.
The only caveat I'd like to put on that is that we want to be cautious about the extent to which we need to go beyond the 1 mile. In other words,
right.
I think you have a responsible commission here that understands that. Mm-hmm.
I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, well, and I mean, it's you're right. I mean, it's a reasonable point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the paragraph before that, I think that we've taken the position that we feel that we can do it within the 1 mile and should be able to work that out. And we have been working with the landowners, and we certainly understand that from a company standpoint, we'd want to get purchase easements from them rather than having to go into any type of court action or condemnation action. But we feel that we have that area within the 1 mile that we should be able to work it out.
What about the avoidance areas? Because it does say in that same paragraph it will lie outside of all exclusion areas and almost all avoidance areas. Are you talking about there's no homes within that?
Well, without
Maybe we should, you know, maybe we should go through that.
Okay, let's go through all that.
Because, you know, we did, you know, in the application, you know, we did go systematically through the, you know, exclusion and avoidance criteria.
Yes.
And you know, we've, you know, obviously interpreted those criteria, you know, the way we you know, tried to understand what was intended. And I think as it particularly as it relates to the avoidance criteria, we are within 500 feet of 23 residences. And what the project has done has contacted those residents, and they've obtained waivers from those folks on 18 out of the 23 residents. And of the remaining five, the project will reroute around three of them, and they're in active discussions with the other two. And if those are not, don't come to pass or not, then the project will reroute the other two. So I think that what you will end up with is there will be no residences within 500 feet of
or
the center
line.
Or
we will have waivers. Yes. So that is, I think, is one of the areas we saw as being, you know, a critical avoidance factor that was important to try to resolve. And we have indicated that we do have some other, you know, areas that are where we are in fact, you know, we're not going to fully comply with some of the avoidance factors. For example, we do cross a short section of state forest up on the Pembina River, and I think our approach there is that we would like to be able to work with the forest, you know, the state forest, and come up with a mitigation plan that is satisfactory to them. But that is an example. It's one of those places where you've got a fairly steep and sized river channel, and that's the best place to cross the river. But it happens to be in state forest, and therefore you have to sort of balance, you know, going through that particular property versus, you know, going further one way or another with more surface disturbance and potentially no better river crossing. So those are kind of the balancing things. So we, you know, so the, for, I mean, I'm just giving you that as an example of an avoidance area that we are, in fact, going through. But I think we're trying to also say as a project that we want to, you know, apply best management practices to, you know, mitigate any potential damage to, you know, to an acceptable level.
So, for example, on that state forest, let's say, you know, we're supposed to not go through an avoidance area unless there's no other, or you're just supposed to not go through an avoidance area. Which one? One is the exclusion area.
Right.
Is that the one you just can't go through?
Right.
Okay. An avoidance area. And let's say, but we still wanted to show that we had looked at other alternatives. So when you came in your application, then you show what the other alternatives were.
Well,
for that, so that we know that it has to cross only in that place, and that could be one where we ask for a wider corridor, you know, at some point, in order to know what other options we might have.
Well, I think we would, I'm going to turn here, but I think that we would explain, you know, just what you've just said. I mean, if we are, in fact, going to conflict with an avoidance area, we'll explain why we want to go there and explain, you know, what the other options are and what the balance of, you know, mm-hmm. the costs and benefits of going somewhere
mm-hmm.
else
mm-hmm.
for your
mm-hmm.
consideration.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
That's
mm-hmm.
okay.
And then, of course, we work with the U.S. Forest Service to get their hopefully their blessing that in that situation.
Mm-hmm. What is, Pat, did you have some questions about a couple things that you had wondered about avoidance areas on the route or something that you had noted or?
Not necessarily related to the corridor width.
Okay.
Rather related to whether the application is complete.
Okay. Should we... we should finish this discussion then first before we get to that. Okay. All right. Do you want to go over anything else with us on page at this time that is important for us to note in your filing here on page 3, 4, and 5?
Well, again, I think, you know, to sort of back up again, we're trying to give you on page two, we're simply trying to give you some explanation of how we came up with the route that we were presently proposing, and the fact that it considers public input, it considers agency input, and it considers, you know, an evaluation of resources that might be affected. I think the other thing we're trying to do on page three is document that the project has already responded to, changes. In other words, there are issues that have arisen, and the project has already proposed reroutes to, make adjustments to minimize effects to landowners as well as to natural resources. Just to be somewhat specific, on page three, there's a long reroute in Nelson and Steele counties where we were asked by the Fish and Wildlife Service to reduce the numbers of wetland crossings and to try to minimize impacts to their easements. And we have done quite a bit of changing in the route, not 6 miles out as much as local adjustments to make better crossings, avoid wetlands where we can. And that's why, even though this is a long reroute, the outcome of this was a substantial reduction in the number of wetlands that were affected. The number four there, the in Sargent County, to avoid Hecla Sandhills, that was one where, and I'll just say that was one where, when we initially routed the pipeline, we were using aerial photography, and I'll say it was in the wintertime. We didn't have a chance to really look at the route, and it looked like the driest place to go. it was really, it was there was a lot of wetlands on either side, so that looked like the right place to go. And then we got immediate feedback from the agencies as well as a number of landowners that this was not a good place to go. So there have been a couple of iterations on that particular one because it's ecologically sensitive. There's shallow groundwater there that the project made a shift in its proposed alignment to get it well away from the most sensitive part of the Sandhills. So that section is to document that the project has been responsive to requests for change, and certainly will be continued to be. I think page four, we've kind of covered that. We went systematically through the avoidance and exclusion criteria, tried to determine where we were or were not in conformance with those criteria, and where we were not, try to offer specific mitigation measures or specific commitments to work with the agencies who may control it, or with the landowners who may have issues. Finally, on page five, where we're wrapping up, we're simply, again, sort of coming to the conclusion that we think with the amount of work we've done on our initial route and our consultation process, that we've got what we think is a pretty reasonable 1 mile corridor, and again, we are willing to be flexible in terms of making further adjustments for specific issues. And I think, as we've wrapped up here, if we truly need to go out of the 1 mile corridor to address an issue, the project is willing to do that on a case by case basis. So that's kind of the, I guess I'll say, the whole walkthrough. Mm-hmm.
What has been the reaction in other states where you've proposed the same 1 mile wide corridor?
Well, I would say we've had, there have been other recommendations for changes, but they have been mostly, more local in nature, proximity to a state park, and they'd like us to adjust further away, being close to a community and maybe make some adjustments to move away from, a rapidly expanding suburb. And so, again, it's been mostly case by case based on reaction to a specific route proposal. I don't think in any of the other alternatives we've considered in other states we have been, as far out as 6 miles from the route we've originally proposed.
Well, I'm not familiar with other states.
Well, the other
have,
states,
but,
that were,
But are there other states that have similar requirements for, like, a 6 mile or 5 mile wide corridor? Or North Dakota, the only one that has that.
Of the seven states that the project crosses, there are only two states that have a comparable permitting process: South Dakota and Illinois. And I don't believe that either of those two states has a 6 mile corridor requirement.
Is that because the Department of Agriculture does the siting in, like, Iowa? Because we've been involved with other state agencies in other states.
Actually, we don't go through Iowa. We go through Nebraska, which does not have a siting statute. We go through Kansas, which has a relatively pro forma filing. We go through Oklahoma, which also has a very pro forma plat filing requirement. We go through Missouri, which does not have a siting process. And we go through Illinois, which does have a detailed certificate of good standing process. But I wasn't personally involved in Illinois, but I don't believe that there's a 6 mile corridor requirement in Illinois.
No, there's not. It's really more, I think the emphasis in Illinois is kind of along the way you're, you know, the direction you're going. It's sort of more of best management practices for agricultural lands and ensuring that that land is restored properly.
Well, I think we have a good law here, and I also appreciate the fact that it gives us some flexibility when it's needed, and sometimes it is needed to have that 6 mile corridor. And so I think that it's important for it to stay in place. But I do believe in using the flexibility that we have within it when it's when it seems like it's applicable. So, questions? Other questions, Bill?
No.
Pat.
The other ones I have been answered.
I have a comment, I guess. My impression is that maybe the federal, the Department of State, or whoever, their procedure would be one where you designate a route, not necessarily designate a corridor either, and they just look at the route to see if there are issues along that route.
Well, and I think that's true. I mean, whereas we, you know, when you deal with, for example, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, that is precisely the way they work. They tend to, you say, they say, they ask the applicant for a route, and then they essentially put it in, you know, forth for public review, and then they start to adjust that route based on issues that arise. So it essentially puts it clearly sometimes things change quite a bit and you get alternatives, particularly if you're in a, you know, an EIS process, and you may have additional things to look at. But there is an initial proposal that is pretty specific, and therefore it goes along. And that's, in some ways, I think Department of State, that's not, you know, this isn't what they really do for a living. They're doing it because they have to issue a presidential permit, but I think they're trying to model this project a bit along that kind of FERC procedure.
So in a way, they're not really restricted to 3 miles either side of this route. They're not limited at all. They could say
that's correct.
That has to move 8 miles or 10 miles.
Well, exactly. In other words, what they could do in the NEPA process, they could say, well, we've considered all this input and we want you to, you know,
put it in
propose another alternative.
Yeah, right.
Well, I mean, yeah, go to Minnesota. I mean, certainly, yeah. You know, I mean, NEPA gives you a lot of flexibility, but usually it's driven by an issue, a site-specific issue that drives you to look at something else. Mm-hmm. That, you know, as you say, there are no bounds on that. It's issue-specific.
Do you have more questions, Commissioner Kramer, on this issue about the?
About the 1 mile, I really don't, and I have to say, my sense right now is that I'm fairly comfortable with it, and largely because of the two years you've spent preparing it. If all this wasn't as tight as it is, I'd be less comfortable for sure. I also do appreciate the last paragraph of Scott's testimony. I think that is the disclaimer that we need to be able to ensure that there is flexibility between now and the hearing. So that, if something does come up, and issuing the permit, for that matter, so if something does come up, it's kind of a given anyway. Even if we had a 6 mile corridor, if it's suddenly 7 miles, you have to deal with it. You have to deal with it outside of the corridor. So, you know, I guess with your commitment and whatnot, I'm comfortable.
I'm not sure what the wording is of our documents that we
have. I have the
this
order
afternoon
in my office.
Let's see, I have it here too, the motion. Let me just take a look at what that says and whether we would want to make sure that we talk about for a one-mile corridor, I think we should make make the exception, which may be adjusted, which some language that needs to go in there, Pat, about this, that, however, the commission may require detailed studies outside of that one-mile corridor with respect to any areas or something. Bill, maybe you and Pat can work out some language.
Well, I think you can use the language just modified a little bit from what's in that last paragraph on page 5.
You want a motion with that provision?
I think that I would feel more
it's
comfortable
fine, yeah.
With that.
Whether it's in
there.
The motion or the order or the evidence, I guess.
I don't even know if we need it in the motion because it's in
the
this
order,
document.
The order is what's important.
Right. I don't know that it's important in the motion either.
Well, the order is what? We don't have an order.
It's a motion.
All we have is a motion, so we do not have any order.
Oh, I thought you...
No.
It's the same.
I assumed you were talking about an order that had been prepared.
No, I guess
okay.
In my mind, a motion is equivalent to an order if they say, I move the commission approve the request of the one-mile corridor for purposes of the application. The fact that we have this in the record.
I think it would be good to put into to the motion the additional language. That way it's
okay, and
it's
so if you and if you and Bill can work on that language, and then we'll take a look at it at that time, if that sounds okay.
I think that'd be fine.
All right, okay, then let's move on to the questions that Pat had on the whether the application is complete.
I just had, I had visited with Todd Kranda about mapping of all the avoidance and exclusion areas, and I don't know if you found now in your mapping that is included. There was an irrigation. And
go ahead, Scott, if you
will. Well, I mean, I guess what you know what we did is we put together maps that were that included a number of them. But for example, like you said, you know, where is that pivot irrigation piece? I mean, we can in fact go back through and ensure that all of those, you know, those locations are identified on a map, if that's what you're requesting.
Yeah. As far as I could tell, the maybe you could tell me which of the avoidance and areas have not been mapped.
Let me look. Page 21.
I assume that, like, the residences, have they been?
Yeah, we have. Let me just sort of back up. I mean, what we have is a fairly, you know, detailed photo base. You know, it's a scale of 1 to 6,000. I mean, so you can really see everything. You can see everybody's houses and outbuildings, and you can see all the natural features. And you know, we've got a database that shows, for example, where all the residences are that we've been able to identify. And if that is something that we need to specifically provide to you on a map, we'll certainly do that. And so of the things that I guess I'm looking at here that you do not have on a map would be, you know, the residences are not, you know, on a map. But I think we've already had some internal discussions on that. We're going to provide you with those probably, you know, maybe even 8.5 by 11 to show where each residence is relative to the center line of the pipeline.
That's helpful.
So that would then, and I think we can probably commit to providing, you know, who that owner would be, because we're also, I think, in response to a request from Patrick, we're interested in trying to get some understanding of the actual ownership of, you know, the you know, the actual parcels that are intercepted by the line.
And we've had a request for that information also from a citizen of the state who's interested in knowing how close it would come to their home.
Right. So this is part of the, I mean, the response to the things that, that Patrick has raised. I'm just trying to go through here. The irrigated land, we will certainly, we can provide you with a figure and an actual, you know, there's the pivot, there's the, where the line goes relative to that pivot. We'll get you on an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper.
Just can I ask a question, though? Maybe this is for Pat, as much as anything. Is all of this required for the application to be deemed complete, or is this just something we'd like to have as evidence eventually in the record, not before or at the hearing?
Well, I think you want to have things identified so that in prior applications, like I can relate to residences, we could go to a map and we could see where the residences were along the route and know, you know, exactly where they were. Now, I think that's what Pat's talking about.
Those are avoidance areas, and they're, I mean, that's basically.
I'd have to say that the law, neither the law or the rules, require that all that the exclusion and avoidance areas be mapped.
It could be.
We have guidelines.
I didn't know the question existed.
How so we would like.
Well, I didn't either. But I'm just the only reason I raised that question. I'm not saying it's bad information, and we probably have. We're the commission. We ask for information. People tend to give it to us, and rarely do they push back and say, you know, the law doesn't require us to do that. My concern is, if it's a concern, my only point is that our plan, at least at this point, would be to deem this complete today and when we reconvene. But if that's not going, you know, obviously they're not going to give those to us in the next 25 minutes, right?
If they say they're going to give it to us, that's all you need.
Okay, well, that's.
Or else we could deem it complete in 2 weeks when we've received that information.
If you have a commitment from them, the information that you want, that's all you need.
And by a certain date?
You can have by.
I think we're looking around, I guess we better.
Yeah.
The answer is yes.
Yes.
The question is, what's the date certain by which we can get it all together?
Yeah. I've had communication since Pat contacted me on some of these, and we have a checklist that individuals are assigned these tasks, and so we are getting the detailed map, similar to, I think, the comment that a public citizen came up with, that when we had these open houses, I know Commissioner Kramer, you were there, mm-hmm. those 6-foot by 4-foot maps that are real defined,
right.
We're generating a paper copy of those. They may not be that large of scale, but we're going to have a hard copy as well as a CD or DVD
sure.
along the entire route showing those details, the residences, the sheds, the everything that an aerial photograph would show, just like we had at those open houses. So to that extent, I think that, you know, we are committed to provide that. It will show some of the inquiry that citizens have asked where my house is relative to the actual line, so that not only will you be able to look on this map, but you'll have a DVD that has this electronically that you can pull up or print off, I assume, access to a printer mm-hmm. to provide that individually to whoever inquires with you, pretty much everything else that I've got, a landowner list we're putting together, contact list, things like that that have been requested. But to the extent that, I guess, one of the questions Pat raised was, are all these mapped? I think to the extent that some of these, when you look at the chart on 21 and 20,
mm-hmm.
there's another page, the avoidance exclusion areas, to the extent that they are not within there, they aren't mapped because they just don't exist. We don't have a key mark on these maps showing those. And the key does, the legend shows those that are a yes, but, for instance, the houses, the pivot, those are not targeted, and we will get an overlay with those details for you.
Sure. Anything, I guess it just in general, anything that has not been targeted. on the maps if you can provide 8.5 by 11s.
Okay.
Was there a time frame that you wanted that by, or just a commitment that we will get it to you and as quick as we can?
I understood that we probably could produce those fairly quickly. I'm guessing
in a couple weeks,
a week or 10 days. I believe the data is there. We just have to make it manageable for you and get it sent here.
Why don't you just figure 2 weeks?
Why don't we commit to 2 weeks and endeavor to do it?
Mm-hmm. That would be good. Thank you.
Because that would make it easier for people who call in.
Yes,
know
it
where.
Would.
And am I on the line? And
that's right, and it's going to be much easier for the staff to answer their questions.
They can send the map out.
That's right.
Exactly where they are.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully we'll be able to see Township Drain Section.
Yeah. We should be able to put that on there, or even talked about overlaying it on these maps, or referring to these maps.
Well, the scale on these
would be too
is
big.
Pretty
yeah,
is
too small.
Small. Yeah,
it would be too big of an area.
You weren't at one of the open houses, were you?
I didn't see the larger scale.
Commissioner Kramer can attest to the detail is very detailed. I mean, you can get down to see a person standing in a yard.
Every farmer knew every rock, too, let me tell you.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
The detail of the maps that we have available, and I believe those will be similar or pretty close to the scale,
okay.
will be identified. They could find a major route and say, yep, this is who, neighbor so-and-so is, and this is, oh, yeah, there's their house. I mean, at the open houses, mm-hmm. they enjoyed going over those. And
yes, they do.
Houses.
I tell you, that's one of the
we'll
main
that.
Things.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anything else?
I don't think so. No.
Okay. And you've already gone over with them the list of things that you need, and we've discussed those things here today.
Yes.
All right. Okay. And they're going to provide them within 2 weeks unless they get back to us. And it's Bill, are you telling us that then, even before we receive these, as long as we've received a commitment from the company to provide those, that we can deem the application complete with the understanding that we're going to get that additional information.
Right.
Okay. All right. Is there anything else, Pat, that you had any concerns about?
No.
Okay. All right. Bill, is there anything else that
no.
you would like us to address at the hearing?
No.
Okay. Commissioner Kramer.
I don't think so, other than just, thanks for coming. And it is amazing our ability nowadays to collect and analyze spatial data, and really does make this process a lot easier than it probably used to be when some of these laws were even written. And I agree with Commissioner Weefall. I like our law in general, and it's well protected by a reasonable commission. And I think you have that now.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll hope for that for the future for you, too.
It's been good.
Yeah.
It's been that way for quite a number of years. It's worked well. All right. With that, then, we will close the informal hearing on case number PU06421.
Thank you very much for this opportunity.
You're welcome. Thank you. Good to have a chance to sit down and start to work with you on this whole matter.